Well, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever, however you're listening. This will be my third and final installment of the Fatherhood series. Today, I had on my dear friend DL Cummings, who's been on the show before, and I figured he would be a good person to kind of talk over this sort of fatherhood stuff with, because he has a whole series on his channel where I think it's every Friday he interviews somebody else who's a dad. So he is a father of himself. His son is 6 years old, I believe he says throughout the show. And we kind of talk about his experience as a father and also kind of like the knowledge of your kids, because it always seems apparent that our kids are a lot smarter than we give them credit for. And I wanted to pick his brain a little bit about that. And obviously him interviewing so many different people who are fathers, he would have a lot more insight than I would. So it is a simultaneously humble and entertaining conversation. At least I know it was for me. So hopefully you guys enjoy the final installment of the Fatherhood series with my dear friend, DL Cummings.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Introducing the Star Patrol Spotlight, the most intense flashlight you've ever seen. Compared to two car headlights, the Star Patrol shines up to four times as bright.
That's bright!
Illuminate objects up to a half mile away, even from the top of a skyscraper. The Star Patrol easily lights up buildings from across the skyline.
That's insanely bright!
Push Turbo Boost for a crazy bright boost that's 100 times brighter for 30,000 candelas of mega bright light.
What? That's insanely bright!
With 10 illumination modes, the Star Patrol is a spotlight, floodlight, emergency light, and more. Take care of all your lighting needs with one Star Patrol. Don't settle for dull flashlights. If the Star Patrol isn't the brightest flashlight you've ever seen, return it for a full refund. Go to GetStarPatrol.com for your free turbo boost, plus free shipping and a money-back guarantee. That's GetStarPatrol.com. GetStarPatrol.com.
All right, and welcoming back to the show to finish out the Fatherhood series. I have my friend DL with me today. He's been on the show before, but I'm very glad to have him back. DL, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you, man?
Fantastic. I couldn't be more excited, and I'm very, very glad that you could come on to do this, basically round out this whole little series with me. So I wanted to get a couple different dads on and people that I'm friends with and talk to somewhat frequently to discuss fatherhood, because in here, if you're listening to this as a channel member, I think you get about a week before my life permanently changes. So I'm very much looking forward to it. I feel like we're about as ready as we could possibly be, and no one's ever ready. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we're in the right headspace. The house is clean as it's going to be. We have three freezers full of food, two fridges full of food, and the home gym set up. I can't think of much else that we could really have in line to, add one more person to our household. So I know that's a little bit of a tangent, but I'm kind of curious where you were and what your thoughts were before. I believe it was your son kind of came to came home with you for the first time.
So it was an interesting feeling, because you don't really know what to expect. And like, I don't want this to sound creepy, but I've kind of been around kids a bit, because I was a youth director for a while for teenagers, and my ex-wife at the time, she worked with the junior high kids. I've got two siblings that are younger than me. We've had family friends that have brought their kids over, and I've had to babysit. So, I've all that experience meant nothing. That's really what it amounted to.
Yeah.
Because when you get your own, and it depends on your personality. Like I had to work kind of hard not to become the helicopter parent. Mm-hmm. Because what I didn't have experience with was babies, like infants. And so I'm like when he was first born, the nurses are like flopping him around and doing this stuff. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, careful, careful. Right. But I didn't know what to expect, really. I just knew that this was, you know, it's, it, I thought it was going to be fun. And so far it has been a blast. It's been a great 6 years. And hands down, like no questions asked. And so, but it was just literally new experience after new experience. Even experiences where you're like, I know this is coming. You still, and it's just one of those things where until you actually go through it, you don't really know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't, and you have to work hard to not become that parent that's like, oh, you don't have kids. You don't understand what it's like. But yeah, there is truth to that. Sure. You know, because I'll give you a good example, a funny one. My son, when he was like maybe three, he got diarrhea really bad. And he's still in diapers. And in like the middle of the night, like 3 a.m., you hear somebody yell, "Daddy, poopy." Because he couldn't do full sentences yet.
Sure.
And so you're just like waking up in the middle of the night. And for me, I'm like, on one hand, you're like, oh man, because this isn't just normal poopy. Okay. That we knew this. This was the god awful. If there was, you know, waking up at 3 a.m. was awful, but it's just one of those experiences that you cannot convey to other people. And they're like, yeah, I've changed a diaper before. Like, yeah, you ain't done this before. I promise you, you know? And it was a weird mix of feelings because on one hand, it's like, man, this little thing here, and I don't mean it derogatory in a negative way, but like this little thing is calling for me specifically at 3 a.m. Like, how cool is that? Right. But how not cool is it for what he's calling me for? Mm-hmm. Right. At the same time. And so like, I just felt like that really represents a lot of the experiences where like it's brand new. You might've been able to say, yeah, I'm totally going to go through that. And yeah, I'll deal with it. But you just don't know. And then sometimes, in many cases, there's a lot of mixed feelings all at the same time, you know, because you're like, wow, this, you know, my little guy needs me. I'm going to go rescue him. Mm-hmm. But then you're like, oh, rescuing him from a diaper, you know? So it's like, this is not the cool rescue, if you will. So it's just, you know, and before that, like I had no idea really before that leading up, I was really just focused on my wife. I think she got that book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. She got it and I read like half of it. And when I say like half of it, I mean, like literally, I think I read like half the book. And I like anytime she would go to a doctor's appointment, I went with her most of the time, but on the rare occasion that I didn't and she would communicate something to me, I'd be like Googling it. And then I'd spend like the next hour reading like every webpage about that I could find on whatever it was. And there was no problems. It was just, I was being a worrywart. This is kind of my thing. You know, I like to tell people I'm a basket case. So, you know, so it's really hard to describe that feeling because it's very one-sided as well. Like baby doesn't really know you. Like it's not like today where he can come and he can be like, hey dad, how you doing? You know, guess what I did, you know, and you have like this interaction back and forth and I could tell him like, hey, I was playing Minecraft and guess what I found? And he'd be like, what? Tell me what, you know? So it's very one side. It's just, it is, I feel like it's hard to describe in a way, but it's definitely something I would do all over again for sure.
Okay.
All right. I might nudge the wife and be like, I think it's your turn to drive right now. No.
Well, yeah, my wife and I are planning on having at least a few. Okay. I didn't tell anybody this publicly, at least I don't think, but if we had a boy, it would have been named Rex. And there was something so crazy. As of recording this, I think Rex Brown, the bass player from Pantera, who's my favorite mm-hmm. band and my favorite bass player, okay. His birthday was just a few days ago and my wife is due very soon. So I'm like, there is an alternate universe where my son was born on the same day as the person he was named after. Like yeah. To me, that's just.
Right. but I guess not in the same month though, huh? That's unfortunate. Cause you said just had it. So July.
No. So my wife is due in about a week.
No, I'm saying Rex's birthday.
It was about
musician.
Yeah, it was just a couple days ago.
Yeah, so his is in July, and unfortunately, I don't mean it negatively, but again, yeah. But August for your baby.
Well, so, yeah, but what I'm saying is like
you didn't get the same month.
Yeah, if she would have been like, let's say in a different world, You know, she would have had the kid a little bit early because right now she's like 38 weeks.
Okay.
So, you know, there's just, like I said, there's like this chance because being born 2 weeks early isn't anything, you know, out of this world. Like that happens. Right. There are kids that are born 35 weeks. This is just a funny little thing. But I think I've tried to do this as best as I possibly can. I tried for the longest time, and now obviously I can't anymore because I am going to be a father. I would not talk about how, raising kids or anything like that. And if I did, I always would put the caveat, like, I'm not a parent, mm-hmm. so I don't know. I have an idea of how these things go, but I can't quite comment to the fullest degree because once again, I'm just, that's not me yet.
Right.
But I can say at least from right now, when I talk to people specifically about like the topic of abortion, I do feel a lot more centered on this issue. Like my conviction on it feels even stronger than it did a year ago, mm-hmm. where I still consider myself pro-life a year ago. Now after, which this is just so nuts to me. My band has a song called The Fringes, right? Mm-hmm. So we're in the process of recording right now. And by the time this podcast comes out, we will have finished the bass tracks for it. So all that's left is put the vocals to it.
Okay.
The first time when we recorded drums for it, right, I was listening to the drum tracks in the car, and my wife was probably second trimester, maybe mid second trimester, mm-hmm. and Riley is my daughter's name, and she started kicking, right? Mm-hmm. She just heard the drum track, right? So I was like, oh, well, that's cool, whatever. So we come home that night, and I'm sitting in this room, in this chair right here, just playing the guitar part, right? You can't hear anything else. You just hear the guitar. Wife comes in the room, she starts kicking again. I'm like, that's really cool. Right?
Yeah.
And it's the same song. So then we're like, all right, well, let's run this one more time. So I found a live performance of us playing it, lay down, cuddled the wife, and surely enough, song starts playing, starts kicking again. I'm like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I from time to time I'll sit down and I'll talk to her and I'll put my hand on her something to be like, hey, can you give me a high five? And couple seconds later, I feel something pushing.
Yeah.
So just like to me, I'm like, that is undoubtedly my daughter in there. My daughter knows my voice.
Right.
My wife has these non-stress tests that she has to go to twice a week because she has gestational diabetes. And like she's handled it incredibly well. Like I'm impressed with how well she's kind of handled all this stuff. And for these non-stress tests, basically they want to watch the heart rate go up and come back down, go up and come back down a couple of times over within the course of like 10 minutes. Sometimes it takes a half hour. And I put my hand on her stomach and I don't recall if I said anything, but I just like put my hand on her stomach. I may have said like a few words and her heart rate went up to 180 and then like came back down. So just, I know this is like a big tangent, but I'm just like thinking about all this stuff and it reminds you that there's definitely something there. And for me, I don't feel like it's quite as real as it's going to be when I'm actually holding my daughter, but like it is there's no doubt in my mind that what's in my wife's stomach is a human being that's going to be autonomous and have her own wants, desires, feelings, personality, one day completely separate from what I may want and how I may act and how I may want her to direct herself in the world. So I know that's a tangent and I'm sure I probably got your brain going in a million different directions. So feel free to kind of take it from where you want.
You know, it's interesting that you know, if I understood you correctly, you said, hey, I started out pro-life, but I kind of feel a little bit even more pro-life now.
Yes.
And they say that becoming a parent makes you more conservative, or a lot of people become conservative. I actually have a friend and she adopted a child and she told me, she was like, yeah, I've actually become, you know, more conservative since raising my son. And I'm personally conservative. I politically I'm libertarian, so I don't necessarily want to, you know, implement a lot of my ideas into law. But one of the things that I found, like for libertarians, it's very big deal to be anti-death penalty.
Yes.
And that was probably one of the things that I was having the slowest movement toward. And then I had a kid and now I'm like, okay, for adults, I think I can keep going in that direction. You know, when we're talking about crimes against adults, but when we're talking about crimes against children, I think I've regressed and I've went back and I'm like, nah, I think I'm good with it. You know, because I hear about some of these crimes and I think about how innocent and sweet my son is. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a, you know, a phenomenal little kid. And, you know, like I remember reading something and it really enlightened me. It said, it was talking about like how kids will just have like this meltdown. And, you know, for an adult, we're like, oh, you know, why are you melting down like that? That's just crazy. And what I was reading pointed out, it said, for little kids, this might actually literally be the worst thing that's happened to them in their entire lives.
Mm.
Because like I'm 47. So yeah. If he drops his ice cream, like I've had way worse things in my ice cream drop, like far worse, yeah. You know, but for him, you know, at a certain point, that is the worst thing that's ever happened to him. And I'm like, that's pretty wild. Just thinking about that, like the worst thing that could happen to him at a certain point in his life was he dropped his ice cream. I can't even imagine that being the worst thing. So then I go, can you imagine what it would be like to suffer? And I'm not going to try to describe any details, but just suffer from, you know, some abuser doing something evil and awful to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, yeah, they can have their head chopped off. Yeah, you know what I mean? And I'm not really joking so much. You know, I've become that way. So like when it comes to kids, I'm like, nah, I think I'm a little more tolerant of the death penalty. Yeah. You harm a child and, you know, I'm probably going to be supportive.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's crazy because I think you and I probably come from the same position in that respect where I'm very anti-death penalty because I don't think the government is a good arbitrator of these kind of decisions. Like, I don't believe that we as humans are quite put together well enough to decide arbitrarily when somebody should live or die. And maybe in a week, maybe a month, maybe a year, maybe I'll completely change my mind on this. When it comes to abuse of children and beyond abuse, mm-hmm. I think probably most people agree, including myself, that like, yeah, if there were a death penalty there in that moment, you're not going to catch me saying, oh no, I think that's wrong. That's right. Going to be more of like, don't really feel bad. Would I go, you know, swinging to the polls to vote for it? Probably not. But at the same time, you're not going to see me protesting for something like that because, you know, children really are our future and are, I think, the greatest thing in the world mm-hmm. because they're going to be what shapes this world to be a better place. So I have some ideas on the statement I'm about to present to you, but I want you to kind of give me your thoughts first. Okay. I'm very, very sure you've heard this before, but basically the sentiment generally is, well, why would you want to bring kids into a world like this?
My guiding light for my actions is not the state of the world. There's always something terrible going on somewhere. There's also always something beautiful going on. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm trying to think off the cuff, you know, like maybe two competing examples. But there are good people and we know, you know, somebody, you know, within 1 minute, you could probably think of somebody you're like, that person is practically an angel. You know, if a person could literally magically be an angel, this person would be it, right? We can all think of somebody along that lines. But to bring it more to the children, how can the world ever get better if we don't bring in new people and then work really hard to keep them from becoming jaded? Now, to some degree, they will be. It's just nature. Like you, if you're 3 or 5 or 7, right, your idea of fun is maybe chasing some butterflies. My son had fun just this last weekend chasing fireflies for the first time. He had never seen a firefly because they don't ever want to show up here in Florida. I don't know what's going on, right? But he was with another little girl and they were running around catching fireflies. And it was a really cool thing to watch, right? So that wonder and that joy, you know, that he's experiencing. And so my job as a parent is to help him retain that wonder and joy for as long as possible. Now, to some degree, he's going to lose it because, you know, we get old and grumpy. But then again, then again, maybe he won't. There are plenty of people who, you know, have lived their whole lives relatively happy. And I mean, like, genuinely, consistently happy. You know, we all have our moments. So I think the antidote is children, right? That is, like, it's kind of weird to say, like, well, why would you bring children? Because how else will you fix the world? It's going to be harder to fix the world with me and you, man. Yeah. We kind of already got set in our ways. I'm getting older. I'm looking forward to being even more set in my ways, you know, sitting on my rocking chair on the porch and yelling at whatever, you know, the squirrels or what have you. And, you know, like, we are where we are. But I think it's our job. It's our duty as people. And I don't mean this in like a forceful, you have to do it. I just mean kind of like more of a maybe metaphorical sense, but it's like a duty to bring people into the world and then raise them up and show them the wonders of the world and teach them and say, hey, yes, bad things happen, but there is still always reason to find joy somewhere. Right. And so I think the answer to that is that's the antidote. Mm-hmm. That's how we make the world a better place. And this is one of the reasons why I've now become more protective of children, because I'm like, we can't do that if we don't protect children, whether it's in the womb, whether it's in Arkansas, for those who know, or whether it's, you know, in the Middle East where people are blowing each other up left and right. You know, it doesn't matter. Protecting children is, you know, as they say, it's our future.
All right, everybody. Hopefully you were enjoying today's episode. I just want to take a quick break from the show to remind you of this show's sponsors and the way that you could support me in this whole development that I'm trying to do here. So I do have channel memberships available, which as you could see here, you get a decent bit of free content. So as always, try to remind people at the very beginning of the show, you could see all of a Common Crown's performances that I record, as well as some members only uncensored podcasts. So these do get released to the public, but they're without ads, unedited, no BS, just all for you. So you can see there's just hours and hours of a Common Crown footage that is all yours to consume. I think we put on an awesome show live, and I think our music's pretty good. So please consider, for the lowly price of $2.99 a month, signing up and becoming a member of the In Liberty and Health community. Thank you so much, and back to today's podcast.
And I don't think we're doing a good job of protecting our future. So that's really on us.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree more. And that's kind of always been my perspective as well. Is just like, how do you make the world a better place without populating it with better people? And I think that's another kind of good place to go as well, is I have conversations with myself a lot about what to expect from fatherhood and what to expect from my daughter. And there's a concept more in like the manosphere called like covert contracts. And this doesn't just apply to like men and women. This applies to, I think, things in general, where I think a lot of people do this and they don't understand that they do it. Where like, if I do this for my daughter, if I'm a great man, quote unquote, and I tell her all the right things and I'm just strict enough, then she's going to grow up to be this perfect autonomous person that I want her to be. And you kind of see the whole faulty premise here, mm-hmm. is that you're assuming, you're making a covert, which is basically like a not explicit expectation of somebody that they're going to follow up on something just because you made this agreement with yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to kind of break all of those mentally for myself, where it's kind of like, my goal with my daughter is that I'm going to have the highest hopes that she will be one day an autonomous person with her own wants, desires, agency, and competency, mm-hmm. that I raised her with. And if she wants to be a mom, she could be the greatest mom ever. If she wants to be something else, she'll do great at that. But I just want her to go out in the world and be great at whatever she chooses to do. And hopefully she feels good enough about, you know, our relationship that she wants to return, and also, you know, hopefully be good to me in my older age, because hopefully I got plenty of years left on this planet. I'll be 31 in less than, you know, 3 months now. Mm-hmm. So my goal is just, once again, hopefully raise a great autonomous human being that doesn't require a lot of outside help. And I think that's kind of the most you could hope for out of your children, because I think when you start having these, as I said, covert contracts, where like, if I do this, then she or he is going to do this. I think that's just a bad premise. And it's not only disrespectful to you, it's also disrespectful to them because they can never live up to the expectations you have in your head.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not terribly familiar with the covert contract, but what you describe here,
yeah.
I think it's better off for parents to have some underlying principles that they're aiming for.
Yes.
So for me, I look at it and I say, all right. And then I actually talked about this weekend. So I drove up with a friend to a wedding to meet up with my wife. She was traveling for a little bit longer than I went. And we were talking in the car. And one of the things I said, I was like, you know, he's a gay guy. And we were talking and I was like, yeah, I was like, you know, somebody once asked, they were like, what if your kid grows up to be gay? And I was like, well, okay, well, all I really hope for is that he doesn't hurt people and doesn't steal their stuff. You know, I basically got some simple premises for him, whether he becomes a doctor or a lawyer or maybe a musician or whatever, like that's fine. As long as he abides by, you know, certain simple principles of how he engages with other people. And I feel like that's fair to have that expectation. I think where we run into trouble is when we have explicit expectations on, okay, what is the application of that look like? You know, okay, you don't hurt people, you don't steal their stuff. Does that mean you become a libertarian like your daddy? Not necessarily, mm-hmm. right? That just means that whatever you become, your guiding principle is, hey, I'm going to treat people, you know, well. I'm going to do right by other people. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the distinction that people need to make is just focus on a principle more so than anything. And it's funny because my own podcast kind of started with that. Because I started my podcast, I was thinking about it right before he was born. I was like, well, what do I want my podcast to be? You know, what am I going to talk about? Now, I know I like talking about liberty and I like talking about politics. I'm like, so what's that got to do with being a dad or, you know, like this new change in my life? And so I came up with Liberty Dad and I may have told you this before, maybe I haven't, but for anybody that's watching and hasn't heard it, it's two parts. Liberty is obviously the things that I like to talk about. But then dad is like who I am and like kind of merging them together. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to be raising this little guy, my wife and I, I'll be raising him. And I'll be teaching him like a lot of things, you know, my wife included, obviously. And one day he's going to go off and he's going to learn something different. So what would I like to see? Well, what I would like is if he's curious to come back and be like, all right, dad, I'm home from college. And I know you raised me about, you know, talk about, you know, this and this and this or whatever. But I heard this new principle or this new concept or this new idea or whatever. Just curious what you think. And so I came up with this slogan, preparing for tomorrow's conversation about how we engage today. Mm. And so this idea behind it was it's my job to foster my relationship with my son tomorrow by managing it well today. Mm-hmm. And I try really hard to be attentive. Now, I read a book and I just don't remember where it's from. It was a Christian book, but I think it was still pretty enlightening. And he said something to the effect of, you know, I can't remember if he directed it toward just sons or if he was talking about sons and daughters, but he basically said every father has wounded their child. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily intentionally. It happens. You say no, and you don't realize the impact of that particular no, right? You know, and maybe they get wounded a little more than than you realize. And again, we're not talking about like abuse. We're not talking about anything crazy like that. We're just talking about this is the natural reality when you're dealing with people who have personalities and you can't know everything about that personality.
Right.
Is that everyone wounds them. So I thought about that for a long time. And then just from observation, one of the things that I realized, kids are pretty resilient. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, like looking at my own life, I look at like, did my mom make some mistakes? Yeah, she probably did, you know, could she have done better in some areas? Yeah. But on net balance, love my mama, you know, like she's up in heaven and I still, you know, I'm still angry at the universe for taking her. But what I realized is that if the kids know that you care for them and they know that you're focused on helping them grow, not necessarily directing their path explicitly, right. Just helping them grow and being there for them. I think there's a lot of tolerance for the mistakes that we'll eventually make, which presumably you will probably fall, you know, foul of the contract. What would you call that? Covert contract.
Covert contract.
Yeah. You probably, everybody, I assume, I don't know, because I haven't really studied it, but I assume that everybody at some point falls afoul of it in some way. And so I would say, okay, well, if that's a thing that you don't want to fall afoul of, then in real, the reality is rather than worrying about like making every, you know, trying to prevent every single mistake, make sure that you're doing the good things well so that they can be resilient for when you do make those mistakes, whether it's a the contract thing or something else. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that answers your question. It makes kind of sense. I was trying to bring it back. I don't know if I did a good job or not.
Yeah, no. I think that was all great. Basically, like just the covert contract is basically like, I would put it more in a negative context where it's kind of like you have these expectations in your head that just will never manifest, or at least generally never manifest in the real world. And it's kind of wrong for you to put those on other people because once again, it's an unfair complacency to expect of someone something that they won't understand. So like when you think about relationship equity, and I promise this will make sense here in a second.
Okay.
When you think about relationship equity, it's kind of like what your idea of, let's say, like $5 in the equity jar is, mm-hmm. will never be like your wife will never interpret that as $5, right? It's kind of like just the way that people interpret how good something is or how bad something is or like how far you went to do something. Mm-hmm. People's ideas of what that means to them is so individual and so different. That when you have these ideas of like, well, I pulled out the chairs, I went and I got my wife flowers, mm-hmm. or, you know, I did this for my kid, they should remember this when I mess up or when I ask them to do something. It creates a very unhealthy environment and unhealthy relationship because, like I said, you will never come to an agreement on what exactly this is supposed to mean for you and for the person that you're talking to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that's a very natural thing between husband and wives. I would probably, if I were describing it, I would frame it as this conflict between the five love languages, where a lot of people, you know, your love language might be touch, and your wife's might be acts of service, and you might be, you know, trying to express actions, or you're trying to meet her love language by applying yours. Right, like hers is acts of service, so I'm just making it up, but if hers is acts of service and yours is touch, you might try to cuddle up more, and then because that's what you know, right, that's what you understand, you recognize that, but that's not necessarily fulfilling to her. Whereas if you go and do something, like you go take out the laundry one day, just kind of out of nowhere or something like that. And then she's like, oh, wow, that was so sweet of you, you know, something like that. Whereas doing the laundry for you is kind of like, okay, yeah, no big deal. Somebody had to do it. You know what I mean? So like, it's this difference where it's almost like you are doing what works for you without considering, does this work for this other person? So I think that's, it sounds very similar to that, to how I would describe it in that way. With raising a kid. And now that I'm understanding it a little bit more, I would say we're probably always going to run afoul of it in some way, you know, because it's a very natural tendency. Hey, I did this thing for you. Dude, why are you behaving like this? I'll give you a great example. You'll probably do this once or twice.
Yeah.
Take your kid somewhere fun. They'll come home and they'll be whining about something, you know, after you've had like a nice fun day at Legoland or somewhere, or Disneyland, or, you know, the park or something. And you're going to be like, for real, I just took you to the park. We've been having fun all day. And this is how you're going to behave. Promise you, you're going to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, in my mind, it's what I'm trying to break myself of is just holding these expectations that I think it's unreasonable to hold of anybody really, because like right now, DL, right. Hopefully from you doing this podcast, you're going to get some listeners from my audience. And then hopefully I get some listeners from your audience because they say, oh, DL was on Kyle's podcast, so I should go check this out. And they're like, oh, I actually like the way this Kyle guy talks. He has some cool guitars and like that little Xenomorph statue right behind him. I'm going to keep watching him, right? Or, you know, maybe my audience said, oh, I like the way that DL lays out stuff about fatherhood. And, you know, the way that he kind of explains these libertarian concepts and combines this with his podcast, I'm going to go listen to him, right? Now, where, like, I think kind of what we're elaborating on here is, like, where this can get, run afoul is, like, maybe I'd be like, oh, well, DL, you need to have me back on your podcast because remember that one time I had you on? Like, that's, it's a very bad premise because I want to have you on here because I value your knowledge on fatherhood, right? That's the main reason why you're here today. And I also like you as a person. So, you know, there's the two reasons for having you on today. Where, like, when people give gifts, right? It should always be you want to give the gift because you think this is the right thing to do, but you also accept that this person could turn around and burn everything you just gave them. And you're okay with that because you wanted to do that because you think it was the right thing to do, not because you want this person to reciprocate something for you. Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's a bad idea to give with the expectation to get back because, kind of the point earlier, these things never equate out in people's minds the way that they think they should.
It's counting favors. And I've had friends that'll do that. They're like, man, like I paid the last three times. And it's like, or something like that, you know, maybe not quite like that, but you know, something along that line. And you're like, yeah, but remember all the times that I paid, you know, like it add, you know, it evens out enough over time, you know? And I think it's very natural, I think, in some ways for people to remember, especially if they get a little, especially if the what's in question is something of importance to them. So if it's money, so if money is really important to somebody, then it's going to be far easier for that person to say, well, hey, I paid for us, you know, the last two times we went out, man, I think it's your turn, right? They're like, they're counting the favors, if you will.
And
when that happens, it's a good idea for the other person to recognize this might be an area that's of importance to them. That's why it's on their mind, because the person might not count favors in some other area where that favor is of less value to them. And like you said, the $5 in the jar, right? It means something to somebody else. And my wife and I deal with this all the time, where certain things mean certain things to her, certain things mean things to me. She is, like, just to give you an example, like, she's what I jokingly call her Prissy, for somebody that was born and raised in a third world country. And I'm like, you're awful Prissy, you know, because she'll want certain things, like, super clean. Like, you know, my son will come in from just maybe being outside, and she's like, wash your hands. And I'm like, he's fine, you know, like, no big deal, right? And so we have this conflict. And I don't want, well, that's not the right word, but we have this difference in perspective of what does it mean, you know, should you always wash your hands after you walk outside and play in the dirt a little bit, you know, if you're a little boy? Is it a big deal to eat a cheeseburger right after that or a piece of pizza? You know, so that's just a kind of a simple thing, way to kind of, I think, try to explain it in a different context. So I think I'm starting to understand, and yeah, I totally get it. And people are notorious for that. They really are putting expectations, but the worst part about it, it's not so much that they have the expectations, it's that the expectations were never communicated.
Exactly.
Or they weren't communicated very well. You know, and that's very hard to do. I mean, how do you communicate, by the way, when we go out, I'm kind of expecting that you pay 50% of the time, and it feels obvious. like who has that conversation? Nobody, right? So then it ends up being more conflict because somebody's like, dude, are you going to pay this time or not?
You know? Yeah. So this is, like I said, I think it's a very important thing. And when it comes to, like, the Manosphere space, we talk about this a lot because a lot of people kind of have these things in their head and they don't realize it. Like, they constantly think, oh, I'm just doing all these things. So
at KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Well, I should get this in return. Right. When it's like, no, actually, like a lot of this stuff just kind of is day-to-day stuff that you already do, mm-hmm. and nobody's going to pat you on the back for it. And I think one thing that we know as men in particular is just that, like, our lives are generally thankless, right? Like, right. if we get a thank you, if we get a compliment, it's awesome. But yeah. we understand that there's not, you know, a group of people ready to congratulate us at every right. waking moment just because, you know, we're just rocking and rolling, right? This is what men were expected to do, right? Women just are, men just do. So in this regard, we just kind of keep carrying on. So I guess where I really wanted to go with this whole idea of covert contracts, do you find yourself battling this a lot with your kid?
The covert contract?
Basically, like, hey, you know, I do this for you, and then like you expect your kid to behave at a later date because you did this.
I wouldn't say a lot.
Okay.
And I think part of that is, one, we have a really good-natured kid. Not good. Sure what happened here, but he did not turn out in temperament like his daddy, who was a wild child, and I was a hellion from the moment I was born.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I caused my mama and my dad a lot of grief. Just because my mom would jokingly say, she was like, if somebody told you not to do something, you kind of responded as if they said, you should absolutely go do this and do it 2 or 3 times. And so that's just kind of, but him, if we say, hey, don't do this, he doesn't. And there are things that, I mean, he's still a little boy. He's very, very 6-year-old little boy still. But there are areas where it's like, is he a child or is he an adult? You know, like, for instance, if you're talking about like he doesn't get a lot of sugary drinks and he doesn't even like soda, which is, I'm not sure what happened there, but I'm thankful. So when he drinks like a drink, he will frequently drink like maybe one of the little juice boxes, you know, he'll drink like maybe half and then be like, yeah, I'm done, and put the other half away. Mm-hmm. And you're like, so it's kind of hard because like he isn't really meeting my expectations in some ways because he's actually exceeding them, because I'm expecting him to be more of a child in some ways. And now he has his moments, don't get me wrong. I mean, he still is 6 and he does his thing, and he'll do something weird and you're like, why'd you do that? And he's like, well, because, and he has this weird crazy, you know. But I think his disposition makes it a little easier for me not to do that. The other thing, and maybe this will be something that you'll find valuable. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I did, and this is probably the smartest thing that I did as a parent, is I level set with myself. And I said, all right, I'm going to have a little kid and he's going to do some things. Which things should I kind of anticipate and expect and consider to be quote unquote normal? And which things would not be. So for instance, the example I love to give is, I say, every kid is going to draw on your walls at some point.
Yeah.
How do I know this? Because I could travel across America and I could ask virtually any parent at any time or even talk to them and just say, yeah, my kid drew on the walls the other day. And they'll be like, oh, how old is he? Like 3. And I'm like, yeah, 3. And they'll be like, yep, they do that. Like every parent's not, none of them are going to be surprised. Okay. So I'm like, all right. So I level set and I'm like, all right, if he draws on the walls, I don't want him to, but I'm not going to flip out. So, you know, I don't have this expectation of what he's not going to do or what he's going to do. But then I said, all right, what are some things that maybe I don't want him to do that are going to be a big deal? If he kicks the dog, that's a big deal. Yeah. And that's not typical. Maybe kind of if for a little boy while they're still trying to learn boundaries, mm-hmm. but not in a vicious, mean way. Okay. So I just kind of level set and I said, all right, well, he's going to probably do this. He'd probably do this. He'd probably do this, probably do this. And so therefore I don't need to be angry, because why would I be angry if I know that something's probably going to happen? Now, that doesn't mean he doesn't have to deal with it. So like when he did eventually draw on our walls, we were like, all right, now you got to clean it up. And so then we gave him a little washcloth and we had him washing the walls. Right. And so he has made it very easy to limit my expectations of him. Not to say that I don't, but his personality, because he's so chill, and that I mean, half of everything we ask him, he does. So it's like, and he does it pretty well. You know, like he's coming home and I did some laundry and I've got his laundry on his bed waiting for him. And when he gets home, I'll be like, hey, you got to put your laundry away, buddy. And he's just going to go and do it. Like I can already guarantee you, not because of an expectation so much as I just know my kid, you know?
Yeah.
And now will there be times where he's like, you know, maybe not putting it away or a little bit slow? Yeah. And then those cases, you know, maybe something's up, maybe he's a little tired, you know, something out of the ordinary is going on, whatever. So I don't feel like I do, but again, I'm the observer. So I'd be missing a lot. You know what
gotcha.
I mean? Yeah. It's basically a one-to-one, what do they call it? A one-to-one study. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm basically studying myself. Well, I'm going to be like, yeah, of course I'm doing great.
Yeah. You got a very, very biased view in that respect. And I don't mean that like a crappy way. It's just,
it's true.
We can only see ourselves so much, right? Like we can't have that much of an objective view on ourselves just because we're not the one on the outside looking in. So one thing that you kind of mentioned there that I thought was interesting is basically kind of like how you have your kid already somewhat acting autonomously, as in like he knows when he has clothes on the bed, like, hey, you have to put those, you have to put those away because this is, you know, what we do. Because obviously a child doesn't understand, you know, until you teach it to them that like you have to put clothes into a dresser so that way they're stored somewhere, you know where they're at, and your room is clean. How does that kind of go? Because if I were to try to explain to you right now, we're going to assume for the sake of the conversation that you don't know anything about cars. For me to tell you how to change a ball joint is going to be an exponentially more difficult task than for me to tell you how to set up something that, let's say, you're already good at, right? Like whatever your job is. If I were to explain something that you already do in your everyday job, you're like, okay, yeah, whatever. I do that every day. But once again, if I were telling you how to do something in my world, like, hey, here's how you reprogram a 2023 Sierra with this specific recall. There's a whole lot of underlying assumptions that I already have and understand that you don't, that now I have to teach you and then kind of watch you struggle and get to it. So there's a bunch of other strings I want to pull on here, but I kind of want to start with the basic foundation of like, how do you start about teaching them something and then getting them into the habit? All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. Hopefully you're enjoying today's podcast. Hopefully it's very entertaining and very enlightening. However, I did just want to inform you guys that I am now writing on Substack. If you look up The Great Megalodon on Substack, you will find my Substack. I don't have any articles published at the time of recording this, which is going to change very, very soon. And maybe if you know, enough people decide to join in the paid section of the Substack for the lowly price of $5 a month, I'll start releasing some of the stuff a little bit early, and all the paid members could see some more articles that the public isn't going to see for a little bit, and perhaps access some video content as well. So please consider going over there and checking that out. No politics, no culture war, nothing. Just straight heavy metal stuff, heavy metal news, guitars, stuff like that, stuff that I'm really passionate about. So one more time, just please, if you're feeling generous, go over to Substack and check out The Great Megalodon. Thanks. Now back to the show.
So let's back up a little bit.
Sure.
I'm by trade, I'm a software developer. I write code.
Okay. Sure.
And one of the interesting lessons that I got from a mentor, he was like, how do you make a sandwich? I'm like, oh, you just go and you grab the bread and you grab the peanut butter and you put the peanut butter on it and you put the jelly on it. And he's like, where do you grab the bread from? And I'm like, well, from the cupboard, of course. And he's like, okay, but a computer wouldn't know that. I'm like, oh, okay. And then he's like, and where is the peanut butter? I'm like, well, it's also in the cupboard. And he's like, okay, so also a computer wouldn't know that. And so he was teaching me this idea of like spelling it out and recognizing that there's a, like you said, a lot of underlying assumptions, even in making a sandwich, right? Like, you know, because if you're programming a computer, the computer likely doesn't know, okay, I have to use a knife for the peanut butter, or I should maybe. And maybe a spoon for the jelly, you know, if that's your process. And, you know, they're in this particular drawer. And, you know, this is where the jelly is in the refrigerator. And so, but I think a lot of that comes incrementally working with kids. So one of the things that we did is, and I think it's just our personality, is we, whenever our son showed interest in something, didn't matter what it was, we worked with him on it. Right. Now there are some things that are off limits. So like if he goes in the garage with me to work, I gave him an old drill, old corded drill. And sometimes I'll put a bit in there and I'll let him, you know, just play on wood and just do whatever. And he knows how to. And if I see that he's not doing something correctly or unsafely, then I'll come over and I'm like, hey, this is what you want to do, et cetera, et cetera. But otherwise, we let him figure it out. We kind of give him the general direction for which to go. So here's a scary one for many parents. Outlets. He started seeing us plug stuff in and he wanted to try it. So we handed him a plug and then we showed him how to plug. My theory was that if the moment they show interest, you show them how it's properly done, that's going to be their line of thinking. Now that's not to say that they'll never go, I wonder if you do this, what if you put a fork in here? Right. Which has happened. I'm sorry. Like not to me, but like has happened like to other parents.
Yeah.
And so like, even when he was crawling and he crawled over to the stairs, I'm like, all right, well, he's going to have to go up these one day. So I literally like helped him. Like he didn't know how to crawl well enough. So I'm literally like lifting his legs, lifting his arms up the stairs. And, you know, we kind of like I just basically, it was almost like he was like a little robot. And I was like, all right, let me do it for you. Right. And so I think slowly but surely he started learning from those experiences how to engage with the world around him, right? That there are things that you can do. So he starts watching us and he starts watching what we're doing. And then we're including him in this stuff. And so we're showing him how. And then basically he just builds upon, you know, the previous experience. Whereas if you hold off on it, then he's got to learn potentially everything all at once rather than learning little incremental things. Like, let me think if I can give you an example off the top of my head here. I'm trying to draw a blank. I'm drawing a blank on where one activity learning that could easily be, oh, I learned this thing from this activity that could be useful over here.
The crossover.
Right? Yeah. And I'm trying to think of an actual activity that I could use as an example, but I'm drawing a blank at the moment, but that's the concept of it. And, my theory behind that, whenever you talk to me about parents, I've always got theories. I got theories upon theories upon theories. Mm-hmm. Some of them maybe not so good, but whatever. I remember my wife and I went on a trip before we had our son. We went out to a vineyard out in California and there was this young girl, probably about 25. And she was phenomenally knowledgeable about wine. It was insane. Like she was telling us about grapes and about, the season and, you know, the weather patterns and the dirt and just like all this stuff. And I was like, holy wow. I was like, how'd you learn about all this? So she started telling her story and she said her parents were wine enthusiasts. And ever since she was a little girl, they could, they were allowed to have a splash of wine at the dinner table. And her dad would say, write three things down that you taste or smell every night at dinner. And then she said, when she grew up, she said, consequently, because she grew up with this appreciation for wine and this understanding of this is how you enjoy wine, when she got to college, her view of how wine was to be interacted with was not the same as many of these other students who did not have these experiences. So they went bananas. And it's very much in line with what you may have heard, like the pastor's kids, right? The pastor's kids who are, and this is a notorious trope in the Christian community, but they get sheltered and then they go out in the world and then they blow up, right? Because they weren't used to making small decisions along the way. So therefore, when you have to make a big decision or many decisions all at once, like in a row, you're not so good at it because you haven't developed that skill. So I think the answer to your question is, as best as you can as a parent, to introduce them to things that safely, of course. My son has never, ever been on the table saw. That's he knows. But I think it's easier to keep him away from the table saw because I don't keep him away from many other things. And he's busy learning about those things. So his curiosity is stimulated. He's learning about the world. And then he can apply different lessons and different things in different areas. And then we allow him so long as what he's doing is not dangerous. And so he's used things inappropriately. But I'm like, it's not dangerous. It's fine. And no big deal. And then other things where it is dangerous. I'm like, stop. You know, and I think that's the more natural way to bring about this knowledge, this information to your child, because they're hungry. Like they have like what, 3 goals in life: play, yeah, eat, and learn, right? Like something like that. I don't know if that's really true or not, but something along, you know, it's pretty basic. You know, you and I got to go to work. We might have to, you know, learn more about, you know, some new technology or something like that. You know, we got to, you know, manage bills. We got to take care of the house. We got all these things. So we don't necessarily have all the time just to dedicate to learning and absorbing information, whereas they do.
Gotcha. So, man, that's awesome. I'm absorbing all this and I'm thinking like, when it comes to having a kid and trying to basically get them to be to the point, like, it sounds like you have a good relationship with your kid, mm-hmm, where basically they trust you. And I know where I wanted to go. I'm sorry, I was drawing a little bit of a blank there for a second, but I remember where I wanted to go now. Do you ever find that your kid understands more than you think? Because I've heard this from people before that, like, you can be a lot more honest with your kids and your kids are a lot more in tune to things than you think. Because I think the general assumption is that, like, kids are uber innocent, and not that they're dumb, but they just don't understand things. And I think it, to me at least, it seems, and from people that know much more than I do, seem to posit that, like, oh no, they pick up on a lot more than you even understand. And yeah, it's probably better if you treat them that way too.
Yeah, we never really did a whole lot of the baby talk, and that wasn't because we're snooty parents. We're like, it was just our personality. We're like, all right, we're just gonna, you know, because I didn't really know how to do that in the first place, and yeah, it seemed kind of weird as a man to be like goo goo gaga kind of stuff. So I would just talk to him just because I was like, that's what I know. Yeah. You know, so much that was really, like, really
what's up, man?
Right. And so he learns from us. He learns from the world around him. And I'll give you a phenomenal story. He's like 2.5 years old, somewhere around there. He's like, you know, his vocabulary is relatively limited. We're upstairs. We're getting ready to go downstairs. And I hand him something and I go, hey, you help carry this or something. I said, you carry this. And he looks at me, he goes, we're teamwork, Dad.
Oh.
And I was like, what? I had not specifically taught him about the concept of teamwork. Mm. Now, he didn't use the word grammatically correct.
Yeah.
But he did use it conceptually correct.
Yes.
He understood, yes. I am helping you. This is teamwork.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy wow. Or like the day that we're riding and we're driving, and he looks over and he's like 3. And he's like, Dad, that's an excavator. Like, where are you learning this word from? Like, what? So yeah, they learn things that you have no idea where they come from. The biggest one that I still have no idea where this came, but it was clearly my fault as a libertarian. So I had to dial it down. One day we were talking about the police and he was like, yeah, we got to be careful, Dad, because the police will come and shoot us. And I don't know that I want to believe that I didn't make a joke about police shooting people. Mm-hmm. But as a libertarian, I might have. And perhaps, to my credit, perhaps he just understood that police shoot people, and maybe he was, you know, not understanding who
the full context,
yeah, right? Like, they're supposed to shoot bad guys and we're not bad guys. I don't know. So, but I assumed it was my rhetoric. So I started being more mindful about what I say, you know, so that, cause they pick up on these things. It's like, you know, I'll just say it. He at the dinner table one night, we're just all eating dinner and he's eating and he's like, yeah, that was fucking awesome. And he just keeps eating. And my wife looks at me and I look at her and I'm like, and he's still eating, like, no big deal. I was like, what'd you say, buddy? And he was like, yeah, that's fucking awesome. And I was like, like, okay. I was like, well, that's an adult word. You don't say that. And he was like, okay. And then he's like, never said it again. It was like, this is what I mean by super simple. Like, this kid is like, super, like, he is a goody two shoe. I mean, like, he must have come from my sister or my brother or something, because he didn't come from me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, he got their genes. He didn't get mine. I don't know. So, but yeah, they do. They just, and so you have to be, and you could say something thinking that they're not even in the room, and somehow they will. So I try not to even have conversations about, you know, negative conversations about people with my wife, unless he's like literally like, he's at the YMCA having fun. Then I might, we might have a conversation, be like, yeah, Fred, he's such a turd, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to be like, oh, daddy, this is Fred. Remember when you said he was a turd? You know, like, oops.
Oh, you know what? That is so smart. And that's something I've honestly never thought about, is that, like, you know, we all have our moments where we're mm-hmm. thinking about somebody and we're like, ah, you know what? Just what they did at this moment really jacked me off. Mm-hmm. And like, you overall like the person, but it's just like this little, we have this about everybody. We have this about mm-hmm. our partners. We have this about our very best friends, yep. people that we look up to. We will say something offhanded that, mm-hmm. you know, we wouldn't go out of our way to say it to their face, but it would just kind of be like one of those things like, ah, yeah, that sucks about that person at that time. People probably think this about me way, 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 way more than I would ever like. And I think probably this is true for the vast majority of people. Mm-hmm. But I think not having that around a kid is a good idea, because that, first of all, it's not going to put you in a bad situation. And second of all, you don't want to, this is going to sound so woo-woo, but like, you don't want to have that negative energy mm-hmm. around a kid to give them this perception of people that's bad. Because I think as we get older, we understand the world's a tough place, right? Mm-hmm. There's nobody that, you know, is over the age of like 18 years old that doesn't understand like bad things happen. And sometimes bad things happen to good people.
Right.
And sometimes really bad things happen to good people. I think protecting that innocence while also understanding that the world is a difficult place is a very difficult thing to manage. But I think we want to, preserve that innocence of childhood for the longest and healthiest time possible, if that makes
right.
sense.
No, I do. And that, to me, that is my sole mission, is to allow him to be a child for as long. And I know a lot of people will say, like, just let kids be kids. And some people say it and don't necessarily mean it. Like, they might think they mean it, but they really don't. And then I think some people say it, but they don't realize to the extent for which they are actually contributing poorly to that. And I'm not going to pretend like I never fail. I totally do, you know, because of between my wife and I, I'm the mouthy one. I'm the one that has to work on, you know, if I get irritated and I'm not a vicious person verbally, not these days, and especially not toward my family. But I still can be a little bit punchy, and I'll just, you know, it's like you're having a little bit of a dispute with the wife and, you know, she says something that you don't particularly care for and you're like, yeah, I probably shouldn't say that. And so then I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to say that. And then I'm like, you know what? Let me just tell you, right? You know, so I have to work, you know, diligently for that, just for the adults. And then I have to work extra hard just so that my son doesn't pick it up. And you'll be surprised, like when they, I hate this. I so hate this. He's learned about bad words. Now, in my opinion, there's no such thing as a bad word. There are words that have time and a place, you know? So for instance, you know, like if I'm with some of my friends who are preachers, try not to swear. Now, it's not too hard for me. I don't generally swear a whole lot anyway, but I try to dial it, whatever I would do, down just out of, as a courtesy, you know? And then there are certain things that I just don't do. Like, I've never called my wife or even my ex-wife for that matter, a bitch, just not to them, not about them, you know, to somebody else. Like, there are just certain things that I don't do, but even still I can run my mouth. And you'll be surprised when they start learning about bad words. They learn about words that we don't really think are bad. So you like say, that sucks. And they'll be like, daddy, that's a bad word. And you're like, okay, I shouldn't have said that. You know, because what I'm trying to do is create some consistency with them, because I know they're learning about bad words at school, you know, and that, you know, I generally want to be cooperative, even if I don't fully agree necessarily, at least with how they're phrasing it. But I do agree that, like, hey, you probably shouldn't say certain things until you've learned the context under which you can say them and which you cannot say them. Mm-hmm. You know, and so right now he doesn't understand that context. And so, yeah, like not it's that is an ever continuing effort, you know, to try to, you know, not talk about people, not say, you know, certain inappropriate languages you don't want them to learn, not to make snide comments, you know, and we're not even talking about like F-bombs and stuff like that. Just, you know, God, what an idiot. Seems kind of simple. Like I wouldn't really think twice if you and I were driving somewhere and you said, man, what, that dude's an idiot. I wouldn't even think much of it. Right. But your kid, all of a sudden it's a different ball game. So yeah, it's pretty wild. It's interesting.
How important do you find consistency to be? Very. Okay. Between both you, your wife and your kid.
Very.
This is always something that I think people don't think about enough, and probably myself included.
Very rarely will I contradict my wife in front of him. Mm-hmm. To me, what's important for him is that he sees a united front, for many reasons. Number one, if he doesn't see a united front, then that's when you get easily manipulated. You know, they go to one parent to get the answer they want. They go to the other, you know, that kind of a thing. You know, it's kind of like when I was growing up and I would go to my mom and I'd be like, hey mom, can I, you know, go to, you know, Steve's house? And she'd be like, what'd your dad say? Like that was her first question. Like, what'd your dad say?
Yeah.
And so I tried to never, ever, ever contradict my wife in front of him. Or like maybe if he stepped in the other room, I go, you know, just kind of like give her a look like, really?
Yeah.
You know, but to the point where it's okay to have a disagreement with her on something. I just want him to know that we're united. You can't play one of them against the other. The other thing is, I think that shows him what a family is supposed to look like, because at the end of the day, he's going to grow up and his family, like he's going to be a man modeled after me. It's, now that I say that, it's kind of scary. So what I'm trying to do is I want his future spouse, whoever that is, to feel as respected as possible. If I don't show my wife respect, and this is setting aside from just the mutual respect that you should already have in the first place for your spouse. But if I don't show her respect, then he's going to learn, hey, it's okay to disrespect your spouse, or maybe disrespect women in our particular context, right? And, you know, so I don't want him to see that. And I want him to, and the other thing is, I don't want my wife to be, you know, with him, you know, without me present and him misbehave because daddy's not here to be the disciplinarian. I want him to know it's just as important that if mommy says to do something or not to do something, it is very much important, as important as it is daddy, and he should treat it as such. And so therefore I don't contradict her. It's happened once or twice. She wasn't particularly happily with me at one. And I only will do it if it's, an absolute emergency, which is almost never the case, or if I think one of us has kind of having a bad day and maybe, you know, it's, you know, like one, you know, like she has gotten out of line, or if it'd been me, like if I'm having a bad day and I'm not at my best and I'm behaving poorly and it's, you know, toward him, then she might need to say, hey, go sit down, go to another room, you know,
right.
You're not being yourself right now. And I think in that context, it's not bad so long as it doesn't happen frequently, because then the child learns mommy will defend me, daddy will defend me, and there are certain expectations that they have of each other about me, right? And so I think that's a good thing to have. You know, now maybe some child psychologists would disagree with me, but that's just my perspective, you know, like limit it, but everything should be intentional as much as you can with a purpose. You know, if I'm going to, And even scold, like the one time that I did scold my wife, I probably could have handled it still better. And, you know, because I think we always can, you know, but again, I think kids and people are resilient so long as, you know, one, it's not super egregious. And then number two, the good, the positive far outweighs any negative. So if you're having a bad one day and you're like, God, you're getting on my nerves. Okay, well, you know, if that's not an everyday occurrence, your wife or your child probably going to bounce back from that pretty well, you know, especially if they if they know that as a rule of thumb, they can come to you and, you know, it's going to be, you know, a positive interaction. So, but yeah, very much. I do not like the idea of couples having different standards. I don't even like the idea when the couple are separated. You know, I'm like, you know, because I've watched it. I've seen kids. They're like, can't wait to go to my mom's house because I'll be able to do whatever I want. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, you don't really have a united front, or, you know, my dad's house or whichever.
Yeah. In my mind, I think displaying, there's a saying, demonstrate, don't explicate. And I think that's kind of the point that you're getting at here, is that you really want your child to see, like you said, a united front, where it's basically a consistent basis of a good relationship between two parents who may not, and no two people are always 100% on the same team 100% of the time. There's always going to be scuffs, disagreements, little, you know, arguments here or there. But I think one of the most important things probably is for a kid to see a healthy relationship and get a consistent worldview from their parents, because that kind of gives them at least like an expectation, or it at least demonstrates how things should work in their own personal lives. Now, once again, is this always going to be a one-to-one? Right. No. Should you expect it to be a one-to-one for them? No. But at least you know that you've controlled as many variables as you can. And when you have, kind of like you said, parents that are split up, then that does create that riff where it's like, oh, well, you know, when I'm with dad, he lets me do whatever. Whereas like you said, you want a united front where it's just a more consistent worldview. You don't want to be able to play one person off the other. And this is something that, you know, like I said, I think about quite a bit. It's just, I want my daughter to see how her mom acts around her dad, and I want her to see the way that her dad acts, and hopefully find a man that I would deem respectful and worthy of, you know, taking the great last name Matovic away from my daughter, which it pains me to say that, because, you know, it's a very proud name in this area. For me to say that I'm going to be willing to give my daughter to another man, which obviously is not my property, she can do whatever she wants whenever she's of age. I hope that I raised her good enough at that point to find somebody that is just absolutely stellar, which I obviously is the biggest hope I think anybody could hope for as a father.
Right. Well, let me tell you this. So even if you're talking, so I have a son, so he'll carry on the family name, unless he happens to grow up to be gay and marries a man, then maybe he takes his name. Right. But in general, he's going to take on the family name. Your daughter will likely lose the family name. But here's the really important part that I think that parents need to be focused on. Carrying on the family values. You know, what are the family values? Because my wife and I got together based on shared values. And so why wouldn't we want to pass those values down? You know, being a good person, don't harm people, don't steal their stuff, work hard, you know, be honest, you know, all these things, which, you know, you might think of as like, those are just good values to have in general. But, you know, I think there's nuances within families regarding those. So in my particular case, you know, I'm going to look at it and be like, you know, taxes are, you know, stealing people's stuff. So the value is I would like my son to maybe grow up to not be like hardcore all taxation and stuff. He doesn't have to be that way, although I'm not going to argue if he is, you know, but it would be nice if he at least looks at it and says, you know what, that's your money. You've earned it. I want to make sure that you try to keep it. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Thank you, bud. Speaking of.
Nice. Well, if he's coming by, then
no, he's just dropping something off.
Okay, I got you.
We give him pretty much free reign of the house. And so he can go anywhere. And then just because I'm Liberty Dad, it seems weird if I wouldn't let him in the room to come in and, you know.
Of course. You know, yeah, well, I dig that he came in, didn't make a fuss, didn't do anything, you know. It seems like what you say is true. So either way, I got to run here in a few minutes. So I do think this is probably a decent place to wrap anyways. DL, I really enjoyed this conversation. I knew this was going to be a good one, and I'm glad you could, cap off this whole fatherhood series.
Sure.
So feel free, tell everybody where they could find you, support you, check out your streams and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll find me way too often on X. So Liberty Dad Pod. I probably should, find something else to do, but that's what it is when you work from home. You have too much availability to just like, I'm gonna say this. So Liberty Dad Pod on X. You can find me on Rumble. That's where I'm really trying to grow my channel in particular. So you can actually just go to rumble.libertydad.com. You can also go to youtube.libertydad.com. Both of those will take you to my YouTube channel or my Rumble channel. Give it a like, give it a follow, jump in the comments, say hello. I stream Monday through Friday at 7:30 in the morning. And then for any fellow dads out there, I'm looking at you specifically, Fridays are my dad talk day where I actually don't talk politics. I just bring dads on to talk about what's important to them in the context of being a dad. So if you're really into sports and you're just looking forward to, sharing that passion with your son or your daughter, that's what we talk about. Right. Just whatever is important. That's my way to raise dad voices and to bring them into what I would consider to be a proper role in society is by just sharing their voice. So look for me there. Rumble. Liberty Dad. Rumble.libertydad.com. YouTube.libertydad.com.
Nice. Awesome, DL. Well, I appreciate it. Everybody, thank you so much for watching this. Hopefully you guys really enjoyed this. And if you're listening to this, then more than likely, this is so crazy for me to say recording this in advance, but I'll be holding my daughter, or my wife will be holding my daughter as you're listening to this, which damn near brings me to tears to think about, because it feels like 9 months has really gone by in the blink of an eye. It's incredible. So hopefully you guys all enjoy this. I want to thank everybody so much for supporting, subscribing over these last couple of years. And it's truly been an honor, and I'm glad that now we're bringing another Metovic into the world. So much like DL and I kind of said earlier on in the conversation, the best way to make the world a better place is to inhabit it with better people. And I know DL is doing that, and hopefully I can do the same thing. So DL, any other final thoughts, or if not, we'll wrap there.
No, just get ready, because it's going to be a wild ride, a fun and wild ride. It's going to be like a roller coaster, right? You're going to be like moments where you're like, and the moments you're going to be like, whoa, I'm telling you, it's going to be a blast.
Nice. Well, hopefully I'm ready for them all. I could say I'm ready, but I know I'm not. So DL, thank you again for capping this all off. And everybody, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.